Welcome. Hi, I'm Scott DeLuzio. I served for about 6 years in the Connecticut Army National Guard. I enlisted in 2005 as an infantryman. During that time, I did a deployment to Afghanistan in 2010. That deployment lasted for about, it was supposed to last about a year, but it lasted about 9 months, as I got sent home, after, the death of my brother. He was serving overseas as well in Afghanistan. He was killed in action. So I got sent home, right about the time when he was killed. And then from there, I, continued on, in the National Guard for just a little while. After getting out, I decided I wanted to give back to the military community. I started my podcast, the Drive On podcast, which focuses on helping military veterans and currently serving service members who are struggling with one thing or another that a lot of us deal with when we come back home. Could be PTSD or substance abuse or any number of things. And we try to cover all the hot topics and talk about the solutions that work for people and help people out along the way. So yeah, that's a little bit about me and my background, but I'm sure we'll get into more of that as we go along. Fast forward a little bit to the end of August of 2010. Our unit was doing these missions where it took us away from our main base, and we were stationed someplace else. And we were doing these missions where we were flying out to these villages where there was suspected Taliban activity. And we were doing a joint mission with the Afghan army. And we were tasked with training them with some of our techniques and some of our ways of doing things for clearing buildings and urban operations and stuff like that. And it was a very difficult task to do because it was during the month of Ramadan, which is a Muslim holiday where they, from sunrise to sunset, they don't eat or drink or anything like that. And they only eat and drink at night after the sun has gone down. And so in August in Afghanistan, it's incredibly hot. And our training time was during the day. And if you haven't eaten or drank anything all day, you're not really going to be up for going out and doing training in the 120 plus degree heat, right? So we'd maybe get an hour out of them at most before they just wanted to go find a shady, cool spot to hang out and just rest for the rest of the day until they can finally eat or drink something. So that was hard. It was almost like herding cats. Trying to get them all in one place and actually doing something, especially with the language barrier. We were working through a translator. It was hard. It was really difficult. But then we would go out on these missions and we'd fly out to these remote villages. And the Afghan army didn't have any night vision goggles. So we'd have to wait till sunrise to go into these villages. Of course, the loud helicopters landing on the mountaintops outside of the villages probably gave away the fact that the Americans were coming in. And so whoever was there likely skirted out in the middle of the night and got away. So a lot of the times we'd go into the villages and we wouldn't really find a whole lot. But it was still a useful exercise because it still gave the Afghan army a chance to put into practice the stuff that we were trying to teach them. And we were there. I like to make the analogy that we were there sort of as the driver's ed instructor, where the Afghan army was behind the wheel. They were going and searching door to door, going through the houses and everything. But we were there to pump the brakes if things got a little out of control, and we were there to help out if need be. So fortunately for a lot of these missions, whoever we were looking for, they escaped and it didn't get out of control. So we didn't have that to really worry about. on August 22nd of 2010, that was the day that my brother was killed. Our unit was on a mission in Afghanistan as well. And we flew out to this remote village and we waited for the sun to rise before we went down into the village and started working our way through. We got down into the village without incident. There really wasn't anything going on there, but we started to find some evidence of Taliban activity. We didn't know specifically who the people were that were responsible for this, but we found stolen Afghan army uniforms that were hidden in some of these houses. We found RPGs and other weapons that were hidden there. And so we burned all the Afghan army uniforms so that they couldn't be used. We had a explosives person with us, EOD, who was able to destroy all of the weapons, basically strap some explosives to it and set off the detonation and blew everything up, which was nice that we had that with us so we didn't have to carry all that stuff out with us. But as we're going through the village, I got a call on the radio that said I needed to take my squad down to this clearing at the far end of the village and secure a landing zone for a helicopter that was coming in. And this was unexpected. We didn't know why the helicopter was coming in, but I knew it had to be someone important because your average Joe doesn't just fly in on a helicopter, right? Especially not unannounced. So we went down, we secured the landing area, I popped some smoke for the helicopter to see the landing area and know where to land. And an American general stepped off the helicopter along with a couple of French soldiers. And we were operating in a French-controlled territory in Afghanistan. And so my guess is that they were just there to kind of check on the progress and see what we had found and stuff like that. So they can report up to their chain of command. And as I talked to this American general, because at the time I was the highest ranking soldier, and I was only an enlisted sergeant. So I wasn't like a real high ranking soldier at that point. So I went over to go talk to him and bring him over to where he needed to be. And as we were talking, he gets a call on the radio, and it was to inform him of two American soldiers who were killed in action. And no names were given over the radio, so I didn't know who they were, where they were located, or anything like that. I just knew that there were two American casualties, which, you know, like anyone else, you think to yourself, oh, that's, you know, it's sad. I feel for the families. Like, you know, it's a bad day for America whenever we lose any of our soldiers overseas or anywhere for that matter. But you know, I didn't know who they were. I couldn't really do much about that. So we just kind of continued on with what we were doing. After I handed off the general to my platoon sergeant, we moved on and continued clearing through the village and doing our job. As we were starting to head back out of the village towards the end of the day, I got a call on the radio from our commanding officer who was looking specifically for me. And anyone who knows anything about the chain of command knows that the commanding officer looking for an enlisted, you know, sergeant like that jumping over the chain of command knows that either you did something incredibly good or yes, something happened that's really bad. And I wasn't getting any medals that day for the work that I had done. So my mind instantly went to what got screwed up. Something bad happened. So I started checking all my guys' equipment. I was looking at the serial numbers on all their weapons and other equipment just to make sure that they had everything that they needed, that they were issued and that they didn't lose anything, because I could only imagine if they lost their night vision goggles or their, you know, something off their weapon or whatever, I'd be in a world of hurt. But they had everything that they were issued. Everything was still where it was supposed to be. I couldn't figure it out. I didn't know what the problem was. So I made my way back up to the top of the mountain and linked up with the commanding officer. And he told me to come over to this area, kind of away from everyone else, who's behind a couple trees and some taller rocks. And he told me to take a knee and take my helmet off. And that was another red flag for me. It was like, no one ever tells you to take your helmet off when you're outside the wire. Like, that's a big no-no. You just don't do that. So I was like, okay, something's really messed up here. Something went wrong. And so I started thinking, okay, maybe I got a Red Cross message. Maybe something happened from back home. Maybe one of my family members was injured or killed, or, you know, something might have happened back home. Couldn't figure out what it was. So he told me to take a knee, and he told me that my brother's unit was ambushed and that my brother had gotten hit. Now, up until this point, it had not even occurred to me that my brother, who also was an infantryman in a combat zone, could be injured or killed. It was not even a thought that had crossed my mind. I didn't allow myself to entertain that thought. I think if I did, there'd be next to no chance that I'd be able to do my job, to be able to lead my soldiers and do what I was supposed to do, because I'd be so focused, especially as a big brother, to be protecting my little brother. I'd do anything to try to help him if I thought that anything bad would be able to happen to him. And so, you know, he told me that my brother had gotten hit. And so my mind jumped into that big brother mode, and I said, okay, well, what are the logistics looking like? How do I get to him? How do I be there for him for moral support, to, you know, if he needs a blood donor, or if he needs a kidney or something, like, let me get to him so I can help him, at the very least be there for moral support. But then the commanding officer looked at me and he said, no, I don't think you understand. He's been killed. And that was like a punch in the gut. It just sucked the life right out of me. Everything just came crashing down around me when I heard that. It was the most devastating news I think I could have heard. It was totally unexpected. I didn't expect anything like that to have happened while we were deployed. Previously, my brother had deployed to Ramadi in 2006 in Iraq, which was an incredibly dangerous area, and he survived that. And so why wouldn't he survive Afghanistan too, right? Like, he should just be able to survive anything. He was invincible as far as I was concerned. But that was not the case. He, like everyone else, is not invincible. And the situation that he found himself in, you know, he got caught up in this ambush, and, you know, he was killed, you know, fortunately, pretty much instantly. He didn't suffer, through the wounds that he sustained. But, you know, in that moment when I heard about him being killed, I was just so distraught. Nothing was right as far as I was concerned. Everything just was just trying to play catch up on what I just heard. It was hard. It was hard for me. To make matters worse, about 20 minutes after finding out that my brother was killed, our own unit started taking fire from the village that we had just come out of. Obviously, the Afghan army didn't do a great job clearing the houses. They missed a few RPGs and some AK-47s that the villagers were using now to use to attack us. And so my grieving, that I was in the very early initial stages of grieving, turned straight to anger. I was so angry at the people of Afghanistan for not being able to take care of their country on their own, and requiring people like my brother and the thousands of others who have come to Afghanistan and had lost their lives there, requiring them to come there and die. Like, that to me just was like, I can't forgive that. I can't excuse that kind of thing. Like, you should be able to take care of your own country. We shouldn't even be here. And that was my thought in that moment. And I was so angry at all of the people of Afghanistan, whether I knew them or not. I was angry at our interpreters. I was angry at the Afghan soldiers that we were with. I was angry at all the people who lived in that village and everyone else who lived in Afghanistan. I was just angry at all of them. I was so angry that I had this fleeting thought that came over me. And I said, I want to just go down back into this village and I want to kill every last person that I see, whether they have a weapon in their hand or not. I don't care. I want to kill them all. I realized, though, that if I was to do something like that and act on that impulse, that I wasn't going to make it out alive. It wasn't that I was suicidal, that I wanted to do, you know, death by the enemy, I guess, in that case, right? But the way some people do a death by cop or whatever. It wasn't like I wanted that. I just had that raw rage emotion, and I just wanted to go fight. I wanted to kill. I just wanted to get it out of me, and I wanted to just go fight everybody that I saw. But I realized if I did that, I wasn't going to make it out alive. And I knew that I couldn't do that to my parents. I couldn't let them lose two kids in the same day. That would be just so tragic for them.
Yeah, and I think
the only thing I say, how I usually get around that if somebody asks it, is that I say, no matter who the administration was, no matter how it ended, it does not diminish the service of the people who served there one bit.
Yeah, and that's the kind of thing that I'm kind of looking for. Is more of that personal aspect. And that's why I'm doing what I am in August, because so many people, especially in September, were making comments like, what? So I lost my battle buddy and that doesn't mean anything, or I lost my leg, or
yeah,
my mind's all messed up now, and you just pull out like it doesn't mean anything. So there's a lot of that kind of response.
Yeah, there is. Absolutely, there is.
Who cares? You went over there. You raised your right hand.
Absolutely.
You had a uniform.
And however it ended does not diminish.
It's not a reflection on your service.
That's right. Yeah. One bit. And that's how I end. That's how I get around it. And I believe that 100%. That's not, I don't just say that. I had a couple buddies who kind of asked me the same thing. So did I waste my time? And I said, absolutely not. I said, you helped lots of people. Your service was honorable. And it doesn't matter how it ended.
Mm-hmm.